This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, welcome everybody. Bruchim Abaim. Shalom Aleichem. We have an amazing shir tonight. But before we begin, we have a very important announcement. Next Wednesday night is Lag BaOmer. So we have a special venue planned. The shir is going to be two houses away from my house in the back. We're going to have a big suda, bonfire, achila, shasia, limudim, eish, all kinds of good stuff. Holy Torah, so please join us. Sponsored by Reb Gordon Zisholtz in honor of the yahrzeit of his father, which is Lag BaOmer. Now, the shiurim on Sefer Vayikra is graciously sponsored by Dr. Zakheim, Lilei Nishmas, Reb Shloima Eliezer ben Harav Yaakov Zakheim, and Lilei Nishmas, her mother, Rivka Bas Tuvia Halevi, Began Eden Tehimenu Chasam. We thank her for her generosity in sponsoring the shiurim. Tonight's shiur is not sponsored yet. If anybody would like to, then we would be very grateful. Some more other important announcements. Okay, so we're closing in on the new location for our new binyan. Many people think that the shiurim, we take a computer and we just talk to the computer and that's all that's necessary to teach Torah. We actually need a makom. We need a place. Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar for 40 years and they made 42 stops. We've made many stops over the last couple of years and we're waiting al hamenucha v'al hanachala. If you go to our site or if you're on our email list, you'll see the building dedication opportunities. You could put your family name on this binyan. Now, it's only $1 million, not a lot of money. Or if you want, you could have the name of the International Recording Studio name. So every year we could say, this year is being broadcast from the Ploini and Almoini studio. And then forever and ever and ever, your family will be associated with Torah. Now here's the good news. The good news is anyone who participates in a Chanukah Sabayis, in building a shul, is guaranteed Tchias HaMesim. The Kavna Rav says that all the shuls where people don't talk by davening will eventually go to Eretz Yisrael. That's right. In a shul where some people talk, the shul doesn't go. Only in shuls that nobody talks. So there are not so many shuls like that. In our shul, Baruch Hashem, many gedolim have encouraged me to build a makom that is kahalacha. And anybody who's mishtatif with us, this binyan will go to Eretz Yisrael. The question is, but those who built it, they might be already, underground. So that means they are guaranteed, says the Kavan Rav, Tchias HaMesim. So there are not many endeavors that you could participate in. Baruch Hashem, the shul will disseminate a lot of Torah. We have a video, and the shiurim, I know many of you are watching, go to many different locations. So if anybody could help us out, especially to me personally, because I do not like this part of the job. This is very difficult for me. So anybody could help out, then we could just focus our efforts on Talmud Torah. Thank you very much. Is that it? Any other announcements? I have another one, but I'm going to save it for middle of the shir. Some of these Dafyomi shirim now, I see they have all kinds of email readings in the beginning, so we're not up to that yet. But we have another announcement that's going to be slipped into the shir seamlessly. You won't even know what hit you. Okay. You ready, Ezreal?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Ezreal's ready, so here we go. The Pasuk says in Parshas Emor, Nefesh asher tigaboy, if a soul touches it, v'tama ad oer, will be contaminated until evening, impure until evening. V'lo yoicham min ha-kadoshim. He will not eat from the holies, ki imrachatz v'sari b'amayim, only if he washes his flesh in water. So somebody becomes tamei, he'll become tamei until the evening, he will not be able to eat from kadoshim. What is the kachim that is it's referring to? The Gemara in Yevama says the kachim that it's referring to is Meiser. And if he can't eat from the kachim until he goes to the mikvah. Says Rashi in Masechta Makos, Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, he can't touch it until he washes. That means if he doesn't wash, he's tamei. But if he washes, he's tahar. Rashi said tahar. And then Rashi went to the Olam HaEmes. That was Rashi's last word. He said pure, and then Rashi's soul left his body, and Rashi, the holy guf of Rashi, was mess, and the neshama of Rashi went up to Shamayim after Rashi expounded this pasuk in this week's parsha. The pasuk in Parsha Zemar, where it says, you can't eat from the kachim until you wash. That implies that once you wash, then you're tar. Rashi said tar, and then he died. In fact, in Masechta Makos, Yotes Amud Beis, we have a footnote from the Rivan, not to be confused with the Rivam. The Rivan was the son-in-law of Rashi. The Rivan. Tonight's learning is going to be Le'ilei Nishmas, Reb Eliyahu ben Harab Avram, began Eden to him and Uchasai. The Rivan was Rev Yehuda ben Rav Nasan. He was the son-in-law of Rashi. He was married to a woman by the name of Miriam. Rashi had, according to many, two daughters, some three daughters, Yocheved, Miriam, according to some Rachel, and the Rivan, Rav Yehuda bar Nasan, was married to Miriam, and Rashi died saying the word Tahar. And we have this comment here, Rabbeinu Gufay Tahar, Rashi's body was pure, V'yatza Nishmasa Betara, his soul left in purity, Loi Pirei Shioi, so he did not explain more, Mikan Ve'elach, from here and on, Lashain Talmido is the language of his student, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nasan, but not only was it the student of Rashi, it was also Rashi's son-in-law. Okay? Now, in Masechta Nazir, if you look at a standard Gemara, you will, on the top of the page, it doesn't say Tosfos Rashi. You know why? Because you don't need advertisement. We know who Rashi is. There's one Masechta where it says Rashi, Nazir. Why? Because Rashi didn't write it. Okay? So, who wrote it? The Rivan. The Rivan wrote Rashi Masechta Nazir. Now, this is very interesting. That means Rashi passed away explaining this pasuk in Parshas Emor, and the Rivan took over. Now, Rashi had a daughter, Miriam, and he also had a daughter, Yocheved. Yocheved was married to Meir ben Shmuel. Now, that couple, I don't know what, they did something right. Yocheved and Meir. Their first son was the Rashbam, who wrote, of course, on Baba Basra. Their second son was the Rivam, one of the most well-known Balei Tosfos. Their third son was Rabbeinu Tam, according to many, the greatest of all the Rishonim. And their fourth son was another Balei Tosfos, Shloimoi the Grammarian. Okay, so that's why Rashi's family is called Beis Rashi. Rashi established an entire, like, empire. Anyway, the Rivan took over Masechta Makos. Comes the Shiarei Knesset HaGdolah, Reb Chaim ben Avesti. And he said, you know those guys, they don't like to learn Moed Katan. There's a custom. Some people, they don't learn Moed Katan because it talks about death and it's a bad omen. There's such a custom not to learn Moed Katan. Well, the Shiar Knesset HaGdolah says it's a bad one. You should learn Moed Katan. Don't stop learning Moed Katan. Don't stop learning Perek Misha Mesoi just because it talks about death. But learn it a little bit quicker than other Masechtas. Then the Shiar Knesset HaGdolah continues. When I was in Kushta, Kushta is Constantinople. What else is it called? Istanbul. I heard some people don't learn Erevin, Nida, and Yevamos. Now, not like you need an excuse not to learn those Masai, you know. But they came up with an excuse. Luckily, they came up with an excuse to learn not to learn the three hardest Masechtas. You know, whenever it came up with an excuse not to learn Megillah, you know, Tainus, and... But they came up with an excuse not to learn Erevin, Nida, and Yevamos because it spells Ani. And also, some people don't learn Baba Basra. Why? Because they say, Basra, it's the last. Like, this is going to be your end. By the way, it's also, yeah, like, you need to... They also came with an excuse not to learn 176 Blat Masechta. Very good. But says the Shiar Knesset, another reason why they don't learn Baba Basra, because Rashi became sick in Baba Basra. How do you know that? Because if you look in Chesgah Batzim, look at number 4, in the Defus Vilna, Daf Chav Tes, in Mel Cheska Sabatim, Rashi says, Aloma Amar of Nachman, the Kamesh Maiden, Adkan Perish Rashi, Mikan Ve'elach, is the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson. So what happened to Rashi here? He must have become ill. So some people don't learn Baba Basra because Rashi became ill in Baba Basra. So some people don't learn, okay, so some people don't learn Baba Basra because Rashi became ill. So he says, that's ridiculous. If you're not going to learn Babas because Rashi Gamil, you shouldn't learn Makos because Rashi died in Makos. Rather, says Asher Knesset Doyla, you got to learn all the Masechtas. It just means don't learn those Masechtas that publicly, but everyone has to learn it on their own.
Is that assuming that Rashi only learned Masechtas one, and that was the only time he learned it, or this was already...
The fact that he died or he became sick while learning that, that's like a bad omen. So some people have a custom to stay away from it. As we mentioned, Rashi is almost everybody's great-grandfather. 80% of Ashkenazic Jews come from Rashi. And again, we know Rashi passed away in Makos. We know that he stopped writing in the middle of Bava Basra. What happened to him? The Shari Knesset Gdola said he became ill. Now I'm going to show you something fascinating. Yeah, no, there's no chiddush. It's just Rashi was involved and engaged in the subject of purity. Tara. No, it doesn't say Tara in the Pasuk. It says you can't eat kodshim unless you wash. That means you're tame, Rashi says. But if you washed, you're tahar. When Rashi said the word tahar, he passed away.
But when you wash, you're tahar. That's what Tara says.
No, it doesn't.
You can't eat till you wash.
Yeah, but it doesn't say if you wash, you're tahar. The Torah doesn't say the word tahar. Rashi said the word tahar. And when Rashi said the word Tahar, that's when he expired. So according to our Masorah of Rashi, his last word was Tahar. What happened in Bava Basra? Why did he stop? The Knesset Gdola said he became ill. However, let me tell you a little history. We come to Shul, or we go to the store, you go to Z Berman, and you want to learn Gemara, so people buy the Art Scroll Gemara. Avada, Moshe Rabbeinu, came down from Har Sinai with an Art Scroll Gemara, maybe Masifta also, the Hebrew edition, the English edition. So the Chiddush of today is, no, Moshe Rabbeinu did not come down from Har Sinai holding an art scroll Gemara. What kind of Gemara did he have? You know, the first publication of Gemara was in the year 1484. Who published it? His name was Rabbi Yehoshua Shloimei Sinsino. Okay, now I know the red Sinsino that your father had that you used for your 7th grade tests, that's not the original Sinsino. You have Sinsino? I think, did you use Sinsino? When I learned Baba Kama in 7th grade, there was no such thing as art scroll, and like you had to sneak the Sinsino under the table. What are you going to get from it? You're going to have like an old, ancient, archaic translation for the word Myrika, saffron. You know, that's all you're going to get. You know, and I remember they came out when I was learning Hamafgid, they came out with the art scroll, and it was Shavuos night. I remember, I think, I learned straight art scroll. It was just like the Gemara, it made sense that I could understand. Actually, the first Gemara, it's interesting. The first, who remembers the first art scroll?
Marcus.
Very good. Who said that? Where did that come? Baskal. Baskal. Machrezes for Imeras. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it was. Oh, yeah? Yeah, Makos. Makos was the first Masechta. I remember the first Masechta art scroll they had. Now they have, you know, the translation with a commentary. On the bottom, they have notes. And then in a box on the bottom, they had insights, like Lumdisha points. But they did away with that. It didn't. Anyway. The first printing of the Talmud was amazingly, you ready for this? You'll never forget it. It was in the year Gemara. Gimel Mem Reish Aleph. Gimel Mem Reish Aleph is 244. I once gave you a trick. How do you translate a Hebrew date into an English date? You add 1240. Okay? So Gimel Mem Reish Aleph is the year 1484. So a man by the name of Joshua Solomon Sinsino from the city of Sinsino in Italy, he published the first Talmud Bavli in the year Gemara, and he made what we called Surah Sadaf. Surah Sadaf means he put Rashi on the inside and Tosfos on the outside. That was a big chiddush. And there were different attempts. So some Gemaras had the Mordechai on it. Some Gemaras had other Rishayin. It wasn't like Pashat, Rashi, and Tosfos. This was the invention of Joshua Solomon Sinsino. And he did not complete the whole Shas. Now, amazingly, in the Shem HaGdolim of the Chida, where he lives, he gives an entry to every Gadol who ever lived from the beginning of time until his time. He has an entry for Joshua Solomon Sinsino. because of what he did for Klal Yisrael. I mean, is there anyone who made a bigger contribution to Klal Yisrael than the person who printed Gemara? Now, he did not finish the Gemara. His nephew, Gershom Sincino, printed more Masechtas in Fizaro. He did not finish the whole Shas. They only published 23 Masechtas. Not Nedarim, not Nazir, not Makis, not Horios, not Kodshim. The first edition of Shas that published all the Gemaras in Shas was in Venice, the Venetian edition in 1520. Who published it? Daniel Bamberg. Was not Jewish. Okay? So that was the first edition of Shas. Anyway, I got a hold of the first edition of Shas. The Sincino edition. Now, first of all, much of the information that Yeshaya got from the Sefer Oitzer Ploys HaTorah. But I did get a hold of the first edition of Shas. And in the first edition of Shas, I even copied it. You could go to Oitzer HaChachma, I put in Talmud Bavli, they give you different editions. And I saw Sincino. I clicked on it, I went to Daf Choftes. And instead of Ad Kan Pirush Rashi that we have in the Vilna Shas, it says Kan Meis Rashi. Rashi died here. Now the Shari Knez HaGdoyla says he probably had Argersa that Ad Kan Rashi stopped here. What happened? The Shari Knez HaGdoyla said Rashi became sick, and the original edition of Shas said Rashi died. So it's a stira. Did he die in Makos or in Bava Basra? See, that's like a very unusual question. Like, it's a stira. Where did Rashi? You know, I found someone who asked the question. Where did Rashi? You know who asked the question? The Chida. The Chida on the Shem Magdam asks. No, the thing is, he doesn't ask it. He just answers it. Says the Hilge Chida. Look at number 6. Rashi was learning 2 Masechtas when he died. He's learning Bava Basra and Masechta Makos. And then he was Nisbakesh, B'Yeshiva Shamala. And the simon is, Vayikadesh Bam. He was sanctified Bam, Baba Basra Makos. Now, there was a great Goyin by the name of the Sridei Yesh, Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg. And he used to give the Psichashir in Yeshivas Eitz Chaim in Mantara. And one year they're learning Baba Basra. And he began the Shir as follows. He says, the academics, they have a big machlekes. Where is Rashi buried? Is he buried in Tawa, in Troyes, or is he buried in Worms? And there's a big machlekes. Says Rabbi Yaakov, they don't know where Rashi's buried. You know where Rashi's buried? Open up Baba Basra. In Baba Basra, there are 2 gersois. Either Ad Kan Pirush Rashi or Kan Meis Rashi. You know where Rashi's buried? Not in Troyes, not in Worms, he's buried in Baba Basra. That's where he lived and that's where he died. That's one version of the story. Another version of the story is that Rabbi Yaakov Chil Weinberg was giving the opening Shira Masechta Baba Basra in Mantara, and he said there are 2 Gersois. There's the Gersa of Shas Vilna, Ad Kan Pirush Rashi, and there's the Gersa of the Sincino edition, where it says Kan Meis Rashi. And he says the Sincino edition is wrong. You can't say Rashi died here. Rashi never died. Rashi's alive. We learn him every day. You open up a Chumash. Rashi, by the way, anybody know this is an interesting fact? The first Jewish book ever published. The first Jewish book. Was it a Chumash, a Mishnah, a Gemara, Raziel HaMelech? The first Jewish was published in Rigo, in Italy, in the year 1475. Rashi, the first Jewish book ever published. So it says Rabbi Yaakov Chil Rangert, the Gir says, Ad Kan Divrei Rashi, but not here Rashi died, Rashi never died. The third version of the story is, where's Moshe buried? You want to go on a trip? We'll go to Kivrei Tzadikim, we're going to the Kivrei of Moshe Rabbeinu. Sounds like a Pesach program, you know? That never had one of those Pesach programs that don't happen, you know? We're going to the Kever of Moshe. Where's Moshe Rabbeinu buried? Nobody knows. You know why? Where's his Matseva? What's the Hesped? There's no Matseva. We don't need a Matseva. The greatest Hesped is God wrote in the Torah, V'lo yikom b'Yisrael k'Moshe. That's the greatest Matseva. And where's Rashi buried? Like Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't matter. Where is he buried? He's buried in Baba Basra. Rashi was so great, we don't need to look for his kever. Rashi lived in Baba Basra, Rashi passed away in Baba. So you wonder, but where is he buried? So that's where the next announcement comes in. If anybody wants to join us in the summer, they recently found a document that outlines the ancient cemetery in Troyes. Rashi is buried in Troyes. They made a matseva for him. Is he there exactly? He's in the general vicinity. In France. Tsarfas. Troyes. Or Troyes, yeah. Rashi was born there. He died there. And he learnt in Worms. So on Rashi's yard site, for the very first time, we're going to go to Rashi's kever. Now, you say, whatever happened historically, did anything ever happen? All kinds of amazing things occurred at Rashi's kever. We're going to learn tonight some of them. So a few things about Rashi.
Why is there such a mystery? Where is the people who are next to him, people who are around him all the time? Where was the son-in-law?
1,000 years is a long time, you know? Do you remember what you ate for supper 2.5 weeks ago?
I don't remember what I had today.
So, you know. Go to Har Manuchais.
The family existed.
In the whole country of Spain, there's not one kever. Why? Because they wiped everything out. France was the heart of the Crusades. All the Balei, we don't have kvarim for hundreds of Balei HaToisus. We have no idea where they're buried. They were all massacred, especially during the Zman of Sfira. Anyway, we learn Rashi on Chess. You ever wonder, you learn a Toisus, especially in Kedushin, and Toisus says, Pirish Bekuntris. And you look at Rashi, and Rashi doesn't say that. You ever see that? It's common. In Kedushin, it's... Or... Sometimes Tosfos in Kedushin says Pirish Bekuntris, and he quotes the whole Rashi, and Tosfos doesn't say a word. He just quotes Rashi. So you have to know Rashi wrote 3 editions of Rashi on Shas. He wrote the first edition. He edited it. He wrote a second edition. He edited again. He wrote a third edition. That's the edition we have. When we learn Rashi, it's the third edition. Tosfos had the first edition. He didn't have the third edition. It's interesting. So sometimes Tosfos will quote a Rashi, we have a more updated Rashi even than Tosfos had. Okay, so it's important to know. Rashi wrote 3 editions. And the Taz says that Rashi wrote at least 2 editions on Chumash as well. Because, for example, Rashi in Parshas Kisavai, I forgot to put it on the sheet. Rashi in Parshas Kisavai says on the word, Vashem he'emircha hayoim. Rashi says, Ein lo yed b'mikra. There's no precedent for what the word he'emircha means. And then Rashi says, oh, I found the precedent. So what's he saying? I never found a precedent. So Taz said, in the first edition, Rashi didn't find a precedent. In the second edition, he found a precedent. It should be on the sheet. Look in Rashi and Kisavoy and the Divrei David on Rashi. Next, this is unbelievable. What language did Rashi write his commentary in? Uh-huh. I mean, of course, he wrote it in Hebrew, no? Says Rama, no. The Rama says no. The Rama is dealing with the difference between Targum Unclus and Rashi. And some say Targum Unclus is better because it was given me Sinai. And then the Rama writes in Simen Kuv Chavches that the truth is, Ki Pirush Rashi Eina Davka B'Lashon HaKodesh. Ulai tiknu b'loshenach. Maybe Rashi wrote it in another language. What language would he have wrote it in?
French
or German. And Klal Yisrael adopted it in Loshen HaKodesh. But Targum was given in Targum. And therefore Targum is better. I mean, that would be... You ever hear that before? You never heard that before. That's worth the price of admission. That the Rama writes that Rashi was perhaps written in a different language. In the very next tshuva in the Rama, somebody wrote him a letter. His name was Shmuel Yehuda Katzen Ellenbogen. You ever hear of him? The son of Maharam Padua. Maharam Padua was Rav Meir Katzen Ellenbogen. Rav Meir Katzen Ellenbogen, almost everyone alive today who's Ashkenazi traces back to Rav Meir Katzen Ellenbogen. His son was named Shik. Shik stands for Shmuel Yehuda Katzen Ellenbogen. He was one of the Gedolei Hador in the times of the Rama. I was zeicha to be at his kever. He's buried in Italy. He says, heaven forbid to say that Rashi was written in any other language other than Lashon HaKodesh. So what does Rama mean? I think, Shmuel Yehuda Katzin Elbogen gripped the Rama, that the Rama was saying that maybe Rashi wrote in a different language. Maybe that's not what the Rama means. Maybe what the Rama means is, did Rashi have to write his parish in Lashon HaKodesh? He did. But let's say he would have wrote in a different language. It would have been Rashi. It would have still been Rashi. He wrote it in Hebrew. But it's not inherent that those words have to be in Hebrew. It says somewhere it has to be in Hebrew. But Targum had to be in Targum. So therefore, the particular language that Rashi has written, yes, it was in Hebrew, but did it have to be? Because if he wrote it in, unless he wrote it in Hebrew, he wrote it in French, and he didn't have to write Balaz, and then when they transferred it, but it's okay. The Rashi script is made up. There's no such thing as Rashi script. It's completely fabricated. Rashi never wrote that script. He never saw that script. It's just an easy way to write Hebrew. There's no such thing. They call it Rashi script to make believe that it has something to it. It's not right. It's not.
We don't have any of his original manuscript.
Writing?
Right.
Could be we do.
We do.
I personally don't. No, I think we do.
So
no, he didn't write in that script. No, of course not. No, of course. Oh, you mean the original Rashi?
Yeah.
Oh, the original Rashi. We might.
What year did he live?
Rashi lived in the 11th century. In the year, I think he was born around 1046. He was about 50 at the time of the Crusades in 1096. So Rashi lived about the year 1050 to 1120. Why would he not have?
No, but I'm saying, why would he not? It was a universal language. If he writes it in French, people in Spain may not have been able to understand what he wrote.
Sing.
Or people in Italy or any place. You would think that it was obvious.
You mean the Jew.
Huh?
Yeah, but you have to understand. Back then, there were no printing presses. So who exactly is reading? Who's reading it? How many people learned Rashi in the times of Rashi? You know, now we think Rashi wrote it so that everyone. There's no such thing. You know, this is very interesting. My friend Abel Feldheimer gave me a tape many years ago from a Rav in Flatbush. I think it's in Rabbi Rappaport, and he quoted the Shem Yishmuel. Very interesting Shem Yishmuel. Why is Rashi always busy bringing in, oh, you know what this word means? In French, it means this. What? First of all, Rashi was born in Troyes. He lived in Troyes, but he spent his time in Germany. He learned in Germany. Why is he translating everything into French? What? Rashi thinks for all time, Jews are going to speak French. And then, balaz. Nobody has any idea what that means. Why is Rashi so busy with French? So the Shem Yishmuel says, what's the inyan of a language? A language brings out the heart, the soul of the people. Like, there's a statement, the quill, the pen, is the tongue of the heart. If you want to know the character of a nation, you look at their language. The Chiddush Arim says, the French are renowned for their lewd and promiscuous behavior. Yadua umeforsam. Ein lecha menoafim gedoilim mehat sarfasim. That's what they specialize in. Niof. And their language draws you to Arayas. The language draws you to Arayas. But you could overcome it. Torah brings everything back to Kedusha. So Rashi Davko translated everything into French to save French Jewry, to rescue the language that was pulling people away from the Torah and into Arayas. Rashi translated Torah into French to save the French Jews. And that's what Art Scroll does. Art Scroll saves American Jews. You know, I don't know if English is that much better. That's a very interesting idea of why Rashi translated everything into French. Now, what do we call Rashi? Kuntres. Why is it called Kuntres? What does Kuntres mean? So there's a very amazing Sefer. The name of the Sefer is Sefer HaTishbi. It was written by a Gadol by the name of Rabbi Eliyahu Bechor. Rabbi Yobachor wrote a lexicon, a dictionary of Hebrew words. It's a very important dictionary. Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote footnotes on it. The Prima Gadim wrote footnotes on it. We had the zchus to find his kever on an island off of Venice. We took a motorboat. We found his kever. He's buried next to Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh of Modena. Anyone remember Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh of Modena? He wrote Yom Kippur Katan. Very interesting personality. The Sefer HaTishri people don't know he couldn't make a living, so he had to hire himself out. He lived in the house of a priest, and he taught a priest Hebrew, and that's how he supported himself. He quotes the priest in the Sefer. Why is it called Kuntres? Because Rashi wrote his commentary in notebooks. A notebook is called Kuntres because in Latin, la Kuntres. Somebody who has five kids at a time, it's called? Quin. What does quin mean? Five. Kvintres. It was called the Kuntres because the way you make the notebook, it has five pages at a time. Two, two, and one in the middle. So that's why it's called Kuntres. Kvintres. Maybe, because really there's seven books we pass in. You know, Chatzva Amudei Shiva. That's why it's called Kuntres. Now, there's an amazing tradition. Somebody wrote a letter to Rabbi Yosef Masos that he heard that there's a tradition that Rashi fasted before he wrote his commentary. 613 fasts before he published Rashi al HaTorah. And Rabbi Yosef Masos says, yes, in the old printings of the Tzrar Hamar, the end of Bereishis, it says that a mekubal by the name of Nachman ben Shmuel went to Rashi's kever. So if you want to re-experience this, you come with us in the summer. And sparks of fire emanated from Rashi's kever. And then a baskol cried out, listen to the words of Rashi. And then Rashi said, Ani Shloime bar Yitzchak, I fasted 613 fasts besides Shabbos and Yom Tov, and I brought my commentary min HaKoyach el HaPoyel. Says the Chida, why did Rashi have to fast so many fasts? Says the Chida, I found in the writings of the Rambam Mipano that every word of Rashi, besides its simple meaning, also has Kabbalistic meaning. Can you imagine? So here you have all the Perushim. You have 11 Perushim on Rashi. Right? You ever see the 11 Perushim on Rashi? They're just telling you the simple Pshat in Rashi. But you could write another 11 Perushim of the Kabbalistic Perushim in the words of Rashi. And fire emanated from Rashi's kever. So maybe if we go, we'll be zoicha to, I don't know, big revelations. And that's why Rashi fasted. Another story. This was found in the writings of Reb Chaim Vital. In the holy writings of Reb Chaim Vital, he said that Rashi, after his death, came to his daughter, Yocheved's son, Shmuel. Who's that? The Rashbam. And Rashi said, Rashbam, I taught you everything, but there's one thing I didn't teach you. I didn't teach you a certain shame of God. Listen up. Understand what I'm telling you, because I'm not going to repeat it, and I can't come back down to this world again, so get it now. And Rashi taught it to him, and then Rashi disappeared. So the Chida asked, why didn't Rashi teach it to him while he was alive? He told him, says, you see the great sanctity of Rashi. Rashi knew he didn't have permission to teach it to him. So he had to ask upstairs, and once he got permission, he came back down and he taught the Rashbam. Now this is a very interesting principle. Comes the Radvaz in a tshuva, some in Kuftes, that we have a great klal, that Rashi is a mefaresh, and he's not a poisek, and therefore rely on the poiskim and don't rely on Rashi lahalacha. Meaning the Rambam was a poisek, the Rif was a poisek, the Rush was a poisek, Rashi was a commentator. So you rely on the Rambam, the Rif and the Rush, more than Rashi. Moreover, look at this, look at number 20, the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef says, what do you do if you have a machloikis, the Rush and the Rambam, one against one? Everybody knows that the principle of the Beis Yosef in the Shulchan Aruch is he took the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam, and he took two out of three. That's why Sfardim followed the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch did not utilize the Balei HaToisus. He only utilized the Rif, the Rush, and the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam were Sfardim. The Rush was Ashkenazi, so Shulchan Aruch is always going to go like the Sfardim. The Rama also put into the equation all the Balei HaToisus, who are Ashkenazim. What do you do if you have the Rush against the Rambam, but Rashi goes like the Rush? So I know Rashi is not like the Rambam and the Rif, but could Rashi tilt the scales in the favor of the Rosh? No. Rashi doesn't add any weight. Why, says the Beis Yosef? Because Rashi was a mefarish. Rashi was not a paskan. And therefore, the Rambam against the Rosh will go with the Rambam, because in this case, it's more mestaber like the Rambam. If you look at number 26, Shaul Sechuvas Halachas Ketanois.
Where does Rashi write halacha?
What?
Where does Rashi write halacha?
The way Rashi will explain a Gemara, it will come out that the halacha will be X, Y, and Z, not like the Rambam. No. Rashi is just explaining the Gemara, but we're not going to paskin like Rashi's explanation in the Gemara. We'll paskin like the Rambam and the Rosh or the Rif.
There were chuvas Rashi. There were chuvas written by Rashi.
We're going to get to that. But the principle is Rashi was a mefarish, Rashi wasn't a poisek, and therefore if it's machlokes between how the Rambam comes out or how it would come out according to Rashi, you're going to go like the Rambam and not like Rashi. Come Shaul Sechuvas Halachas Ketanos in number 26, and he says, and I put the wrong tshuva on the sheet, but if you want an updated sheet, I have some updated sheets. He says this klal of the Beis Yosef is wrong. Where do you think Rashi got his commentary from? Rashi made it up? We know Rashi got it from his Rebbe. Who is his Rebbe? Two Rabbeim. Rebbe Lazar HaGadol, the Rebbe Yakar. And they got it from Rabbeinu Gershon. You think Rabbeinu Gershon would have explained the Gemara not like the Halacha? So if Rashi says Pshat, that means Rashi feels that according to this Pshat, the Halacha would be X, Y, and Z. And Rashi knew how the halacha would come out according to this pshat. And if Rashi thought that a certain halacha would come out that's not correct, then how could he have given this commentary? So you're allowed to paskin like Rashi. So very interesting machlokes. The Beis Yosef against Halachas Ketanos. The Beis Yosef says Rashi was a mefarish, not a poisek. We'll go like the Rambam over Rashi. Halachas Ketanos says, of course, if Rashi said the pshat in the Gemara and it comes out this halacha, he knew you would learn the Gemara this way and come out with this halacha, so then you need to paskin that way. Comes the Chida, the Radvaz, and the Beis Yosef is right. The Chida writes this in number 21. Isn't it like disparaging to Rashi to say, oh, he's only a commentator. He's not a halachic authority. Isn't that derogatory in a sense to Rashi? The Chida asks, how can we even say such a thing? How could the Beis Yosef say such a thing? So says the Chida, we have to explain what the Radvaz and the Beis Yosef mean. They mean, in the second paragraph of the Chida 21, Rashi atzmai ikar kavanosai lefaresh v'lekivan lepsak. It's not that Rashi wasn't great in any sense and Rashi's not a poisek. He didn't intend to write the halachic conclusion. His intention was to explain the Gemara, but not to give the official halachic conclusion. And since our Kabbalah is Rashi himself wasn't mechaven l'halacha, so the Radvaz and the Beis Yosef are right, not like the halachas ketanos. Says the Chida, let me give you the following example, and this is a very important yesite. Rav Asi said to Rav Yochanan, it's a Gemara Baba Basra. Rav Yochanan, you said the halacha. Should we follow it? Rav Yochanan said, no, I didn't tell you to follow it. I never told you to follow it. Don't follow it until I say it's halacha ulamaisa. Just because I teach you halacha doesn't mean it's lamaisa. What does that mean? You know, there's Gemara in Horius. I said this many times. The Gemara in Horius says, yeah, you cannot follow any something you hear in a shir. You cannot. I once heard in a shir, so I do that. No. Nobody told you to do that. We're learning now. We're learning the principles. You want to know what to do? Okay. So if you hear something in a shir, you cannot rely on it. Halacha. What if you ask a rabbi what's the halacha in this case, and he tells you the halacha, and you follow it, and the rabbi was wrong? You're amazed. You ask the rabbi halacha. Well, now the rabbi is going to spend 90 hours to get the exact answer. It's a Gemara in Horius. That if you ask a shayla, I was wondering what the halacha is. So the rabbi said what he thought the halacha is. Let's say, I'm just curious. Okay, so I'm just giving you an answer. That's why, you know, these Sfarim, they were walking this gadol down the road, and they asked him, what bracha do you make on, I don't know. And basically the rabbi said, go jump in the lake, you know, get out of here. So he just said an answer. You can't rely on it. You know, I was once waiting online and I overheard somebody ask the rabbi, just ignore what you heard. Unless you say, Rav, this shaila is relevant to me right now. What should I do? You can't rely on it, lalacha. So Gemara, the Gemara says, Rav Asi asked Rav Yochanan, you said the halacha, should I follow it? He said, no. I'll let you know when you should follow it. He said, halacha ulamaisa. No, it's halacha v'loy lamaisa. So says the Chida, that's the difference between the Rif and the Rambam and Rashi. Of course Rashi knew that if you're going to learn the Gemara his way, it would come out that this is what the halachic conclusion was. But Rashi's intention was not to give a halachic conclusion. His intention was to explain the sugya in the best possible way. Now, if you want to know halacha lamaisa, you got to call up Rashi and ask him, what's a halacha lamaisa? But Rashi never intended to do that. The same way Rabbi Yochanan, in other words, the Chida says, you can't hold Rashi to a higher standard than Rav Asi held Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi asked Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi, can I, you said it halacha, is it lamaisa? Rabbi Yochanan says, not lamaisa. So Rashi, of course, his intention was to explain the sugya. And the way he explains it, he is the halacha that Rashi thought, to the best of his ability in explaining Gemara, what the halacha should be. But he's not trying to, okay, get to the next level and establish permanently what the halacha is. Says Achida, but we do have, who said, there are tshuvas of Rashi. There's a Sefer HaPardes where Rashi wrote halacha. So then the Rashi is just like the Rambam and the Rif. But Rashi usually doesn't do that. But where he does, then you could follow it.
Can you give us an example of what Rashi, and we don't follow it, what he says, but it's not halacha?
In number 20. I don't have the exact details of the case in Hilchot Tzitzis, but there is a... I could give you an example of a halacha that we do follow Rashi against almost all the Rishonim. And as Rav Moshe gives an example regarding eating in shul. Right? Are you allowed to eat in a shul? Are you allowed to eat in a shul? You come to the shul, I don't know, you're learning after that, I want to eat. Are you allowed to eat in the shul? So, according to most Rishonim, you can't. It's a machlokes. According to the Ramban, you can't. According to Tosfos, you can't. According to most Rishonim, the Tanai only helps b'chorbana, not b'binyanai. The Gemara in the fourth parak of Megillah, there's a Tosfos, there's a Ramban, and there's Rashi. And Rashi is the most lenient. And even though we've said... So Rav Moshe has a tshuva that, this is very interesting, the minug in Klal Yisrael is that you can. The questioner asked Rav Moshe, what's the proof? So Moshe says, because people eat in shul. When do people eat in shul? When they make a tikkun for a yahrzeit. So the questioner said, what do you mean? That's not a raya, it's a sudas mitzvah. So Rav Moshe, there is no mitzvah, inyan, or anything whatsoever to eat cake in honor of someone who died. Someone who died gets no benefit that you're ingesting sugar and white flour and other things that impair your ability to think and operate for the rest of the day. What mitzvah are you doing for the person who's dead? He doesn't even know you're eating marble cake. What he wants you to eat, oily fish, alcohol, and cake? What are you doing for him? Oh, the bracha. Since when does a guy who makes a bracha on herring, how does it bring somebody elevation in the world to come? Are you kidding me? You're eating herring and the guy's going higher in the world to come? How does that work, says Rav Moshe. Says Rav Moshe, there's no inyan of a tikkun. A tikkun is like eating bazooka gum in the shul. There's no difference at all. So why do people do it? Because we go like Rashi. So Rav Moshe says a big yisoid. When you have a shita of a rishain that Klal Yisrael follow, that could establish a halacha even against Roy Rishainim. I see people walked away. They don't like what I said. What are you going to do? That's a big machlokes between the Hasidim and Rav Moshe. It was a big machlokes. The Hasidim say there's an Inyan. Tell me the name of the Nifter. Well, like you're sending him a telegraph by making a bracha on the schmaltz herring. Oh, his name. Okay, the bracha on the schmaltz herring is going to that guy. Rav Moshe, come on.
Then they ate after, so it seems, and they just knocked out.
Yeah. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, where does it come from? In Shulchan Aruch, he's supposed to fast on the day of the Yahrzeit. So then people couldn't do it, so they make a siyum, and they say they didn't have to fast. And then people stop making siyum, and they just ate. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says. Yeah, that sounds about right, right? You know. So anyway... I bet I got in trouble last week with Aristotle, you know? So yeah, I'm better off telling stories about Aristotle than starting up with Tikkun. But that's a tshuva, Rav Moshe. Anyway, that's a very interesting yisoid that the Radvaz and the Beis Yosef says Rashi was a mefarish, and the Halachas Katane says, no, Rashi, yes, he was a mefarish, but he's obviously explaining it la halacha. And the Chidah says, yes, halacha v'lo lemaisa. I'll give you an analogy. Rashi famously says in Bereishis, his famous modus operandi is va'ani leibasi ela lepshutai shel mikra. What's Rashi's job in Chumash? To tell you the simple interpretation of the psukim. I would venture to say there's an element of that in Gemara also. Rashi's explaining the Gemara not in the way that it would come out the most authoritative halacha. Rashi's trying to explain the Gemara in the most straightforward manner, in Bederach HaPshat. Bederach HaRait, what it's saying. Now, the Rambam's trying to tell you the halacha. One story, because Azriel said, do you have a good story about Rabbi Elazar HaGadol and Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochar, the Rabbeim of Rashi? Yeah, I do, Azriel. That's next week. So Rashi had two Rabbeim, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochar, who was of a gentle personality, and Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, who was a very powerful individual. And they shechted a behemoth, they owned it, b'shutfis, and they found some kind of mum. Now, Rabbi Elazar HaGadol had a tradition from his Rabbeim that the animal wasn't kosher. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochai had a tradition from Rabbeinu Gershon, it was kosher. So Rabbi Elazar HaGadol took his half, and he threw it in the garbage. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochai took his half, and he brought it home. His wife says, "Nu, what is this? It's meat. What happened to the other half? The other rabbi has it. What did he do with it? He threw it in the garbage. Why are we eating it? My maser is it's good. Fine." So she's about to put it on the grill. And then Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yochai says, I'm going to eat an animal that the other half of it is in the garbage. He didn't eat the animal. Anyway, the commentary of Rashi. Rashi was the greatest of all the mefarshim. Yatzasa nishmasai. Bitahar. Rashi left this world in purity. You have to think, without Rashi, you couldn't read a pasuk in Chumash. Without Rashi, you could not open up a Gemara. The Gemara would be inexplicable. You wouldn't know what the question is, what the answer is, what the Gemara is trying to say, what it means to say. It would be a sefer chasam v'sasam. Rav Miller would always say, when you learn Gemara, you need to stop for a moment and feel hakaras hatoiv to Rashi.
Don't they say Rashi wrote the Nevuah?
So that's what we say. Rashi had a degree of Ruach HaKodesh when he wrote that his commentaries... And, you know, what's interesting is the first comments of Rashi... What's the first comment? Rashi says, let me tell you why Eretz Yisrael belongs to Klal Yisrael. Like, you know, right off the bat, Rashi addresses the most important and most contested issue of all time. You know, who does Eretz Yisrael belong to? But Milanu Gadol, Me'adoinenu, Rashi, Zuchusa Yagin Aleinu, we know that the Bali Atoisis were killed out during this time of the year. According to the Taz, part of the Avelos of Sfira is because of the death of the Bali Atoisis during this man of Sfira. That's why we say Avarachamim during this man, even if it's Rosh Chodesh, even if it's... Nisan, or even if it's a day that you don't say Tachnon, because Avarachamim was specifically composed for the Balei Atoisis who were killed in the times of the Crusades. Zechusam Yagen Aleinu Ba'al Kol Yisrael. Shkayach. Rav Hanani ben Akasha Omer.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.